And your eyes, I look closer. I'm not between you and your ambition. I am a poster girl with no poster. I am 32 flavors and then some. And I'm beyond your peripheral vision. So you might want to turn your head. Cause someday you are gonna get hungry and eat most of the words you just said.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest has released 20 albums on her own record label, Righteous Babe Records. And her new album, Allergic to Water, has her back on tour, making a stop at the Park West here in Lincoln Park. Ani DeFranco is considered not just a musician, but an icon. Her lasting impact on folk music, indie, politics, and feminism puts her among the most influential musicians of our generation. DeFranco has been known to tour and play over 200 shows a year, drawing comparisons to Woody Guthrie and the greats that came before her. I saw Ani play at the Lounge Acts back in 1996. That's 20 years ago this summer. The show is amazing, and I'm sure the show at the Park West will be as well. Ani DeFranco, welcome to The Download.
Hey, Justin. Thanks.
It's great to have you on the show.
Sweet.
I mentioned that show in 1996, not just, you know, to say that I, you know your music, but there was something about that show that it was less of a rock concert and more of sort of like a room full of friends. There was a lot of sharing. There was a lot of stories. It was thing. How do you describe an Ani DeFranco show?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. That's the way I like to rock it anyway. Like when I'm on stage, I try to talk like I'm just talking to my friend, but I don't even try. That's just what comes naturally, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
And I've only noticed more recently in life that can get you into trouble.
Too much
that everyone in this world is actually not my friend. And if I speak to them, you know, completely in an uncalculated or, you know, manner, it might not always be understood.
Right.
As my friends would understand me, you know? So, yeah, that is definitely the way. That's my approach.
Have you evolved in that stage work, that stagecraft over the years with the advent of technology and social media and being recorded? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. you're not just in the room with that 150, 200 people like it was at the Lounge Acts. Now you're playing
yeah,
the Park
right.
West is, you know, 500,000 people. Everybody's got their phone up. I mean, what you
right.
say and
everything
you play is going somewhere else, right?
Yeah, right. Well, can and will be held against you in a court of YouTube. I know. It's a different... You know, all I can say is I'm glad it was not this world when I started out, you know? I mean, just, you know, being on stage is a constant learning experience. I'm still evolving and figuring it out, you know, and how to say what I mean and, you know, just be present in the moment and accountable. But yeah, it's definitely more claustrophobic feeling now with this technology, you know, eating everybody's head all the time and making everything you say, you know, a statement in perpetuity, you know. There's kind of all I can say is I'm glad, at least in my bad old days when I was really learning, you know, that was not the atmosphere. I feel bad for, you know, kids just starting out now in that kind of atmosphere.
Well, it takes you out of the moment as an audience member as well. I mean, the idea that I've mm-hmm. got my phone up and I'm trying to record you so I can look at it later
definitely.
And not. But a lot of what I experienced in a Lounge Act show was about the moment, was about right now, was about the people around, it was about you on stage. So, you know, it would have ruined that moment by, you know, pressing record on my phone.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I noticed even back in the day, you know, I played only little sticky clubs, you know, and there's a certain amount of liberty in that kind of environment where if it was hot, you took your shirt off, you know, you
right.
just, who cared? Who cared? It was you and 50 other people and everybody else would take their shirt off and it didn't mean anything except we were hot. And that was what we needed to do. And then you get into a theater, say, for instance, like my audience got a little bit bigger, and suddenly you're kind of on stage, and and there was no way I would take my shirt off, for instance, you know, because then it's a performance,
right.
you know. And now, like we're talking about, you're on TV every time you step out in front of people, not just, you know, on a theater stage or, you know, so... It kind of makes everything less, Yeah, a little, I don't know. I don't know what the word is, but I think you've got your finger on something. It's like, do we always have to be on TV all the time?
I feel like for an artist like yourself, I mean, you play so well, and not just for the space. I don't mean by the space, but I mean around the concept of intimacy. There's you know, like emotion and a lot of your audience is there because your music feels something, you know, for them.
Right.
So maybe there's something that's lost in the intimacy when mm-hmm. someone's trying to record for posterity or whatever it is. Yeah,
and there's a lot of voyeurs watching you, your intimate moments. Yeah, man.
All right, let's talk about your, I mean, you formed your own record label and moved to New York right around 1990. Which was a different time because everyone at that time, and we have a lot of musicians on the show from Chicago. I mean, they came to a town like Chicago because they were looking for a record deal. They were looking for major labels to find them. We've had conversations with everyone from the 90s Chicago rock explosion. But for you, you know, you weren't necessarily looking for that. I mean, you were self-producing. Why did you make that choice?
It was really my political, my idealism, you know, that made those decisions for me. When I was, around the early 90s, I started sort of getting out there, you know, by Greyhound and Trailways and playing, you know, building an audience kind of on foot and through my first cassettes. And so I started to get attention from mostly indie labels at the time. So, you know, I was having the lunches and I was sort of squinting at that world and going, okay, what is this about? And it was my political instincts that made me say no thank you every time, because I was just aware, even as a young person, that there are some people in this world that are my teachers that I need to follow and listen to and learn from, and there are other people who are not. And the music industry was not populated with people who had things to teach me, you know. So instead I followed the folk. You know, I followed Utah Phillips and I followed Pete Seeger and this terrific poet, Sekou Sundiata, that I met when I first moved to New York. And I just, I followed my heart and people who I thought were really wise and could show me how to live and how to be and how to design a job for myself. And none of those people happen to be at record companies, you know. So I just thought, this is not the world where I will grow and become myself. So I'll just figure it out. And I just sort of, it was a daily process of problem solving to not go with a record company, to just stay independent. But in the long game, it's a kind of an envious, you know, people envy me now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny.
It was a lot of years of people, you know, kind of patting me on the head and going, oh, you have your own record company. Isn't that cute?
But I mean, as we talked about the everything, the way that concerts have changed, I mean, the music industry has changed. Now, that's what anybody who's of anybody is like, oh, you have to do it yourself. I mean, what you were doing in 1990 is what everybody is doing to be successful in 2016.
And another little detail that I want to point out, too, is, we didn't get a website at Righteous Babe Records until 2000.
Yeah,
we were
right.
Like the last to the game. It was, I don't even know why, you know, because I was living in the real world. I was living on the road, on the street. I was traveling. I was, you know, pounding the pavement with my feet. So I think that's a kind of a cool distinction, too, that not only can you do it independently, which many, many people, like you say, are exploring now, and, you know, that's kind of the mean standard now, not, you know, getting the big record deal, but you can also, you don't even need the internet. You do not need the internet to build an independent music career. You know, you just have to leave your house and you have to travel around and sleep on any and every couch, you know, for a decade.
Well, it's relationships, right? I mean, it's not unlike Facebook it tries to do, which is emulate like relationships. But what you did was you did that face to face and you were able to build a following across the country that weren't finding you on the internet.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, because, you know, your music is obviously a very progressive politically, but and it's poetic, but it's also, I mean, your style of guitar, what you brought to folk music, speeding it up, changing the way that the guitar sounds. How did that come together for you? I mean, because I know that you were involved in arts as a kid. At what point did you meld the idea of taking that guitar and taking your vocals and saying, okay, I'm Ani DeFranco?
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing. I mean, I started playing in bars when I was nine, just in an odd circumstance. When I got my first guitar at nine, I met this fellow, Michael Meldrum, in Buffalo, who was like a local singer-songwriter, kind of barfly promoter, and he took me under his wing for whatever reason. We just hit it off immediately. So I used to go play his gigs with him, like, just from the get-go. And then by the time I was a teenager, I started writing my own songs, because that's what he did, and that's what everybody did, right?
Right.
You know, so... And I started getting my own gigs and running open mics, you know, at Nietzsche's or at the Essex Street Pub or whatever in Buffalo. So really early on, I was constantly in that situation where I'm like the little girl in the corner with the acoustic guitar, you know, trying to pour her heart and spleen onto unsuspecting drinkers, you know. And I think my style, you know, my style of playing guitar and singing, which I think has a lot to do with dynamics, you know, it's all about slamming something very loud against silence, you know, and that kind of frenetic, you know, grabbing, spanking the guitar, all of that stuff. Yeah, a little speeding up of folk music, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
All of that was about, like, yoo-hoo, over here, you know, getting the, you know, the person
definitely
who's trying
stood
to
out, yeah.
Pick up, right, yeah, just to notice the girl in the corner. So I think it was like, you know, sort of survival techniques after years and years of playing solo in bars that sort of made me develop my what became my style.
You have a tremendous following. You have a really strong following today. I mean, to be able to come to the Park West, but even back in the 90s when you were exploding on the sort of alternative rock scene as a folk artist, as a punk folk artist, there was like a whole generation of young women who almost wanted you to speak for them. You became like a spokesperson. Did you feel that pressure or responsibility to be that spokesperson for the young women that were listening to your music?
Definitely, that has been a force. I guess you could call it a pressure, you know, all the way along. Yeah, because like you say, there, you know, there were so few places that young women could turn to in their culture to see themselves affirmed, you know, to see their experience or their take on the world, you know, mirrored. So, yeah, a lot of people had a lot of expectations of me to be what they needed, you know, what they were lacking. When I first started making records, seriously, there was still sections, I don't know if you probably remember this, sections in music stores that were women's music.
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yep.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The first, you know, 5-10 years of my making records, women's music, you know, so it was very much a ghetto in my early years. And so, yeah, that's not a healthy place for any culture, for any group of people to be in, you know, where they're starved for their own voice, you know. So, yeah, there was a lot of people, you know, trying to make me into what they needed. And I guess there still are, but... You know, a long time ago, I just realized I couldn't satisfy each of those individuals if I tried. You know, the only thing I can be is me. So I just have to sort of let it all wash over me, all of the ways that I disappoint.
No, you've done a pretty good job being you. You know, early on, there was a distinct raw energy to your work. I mean, you were just a punch in the face. I mean, you and other artists like you in the 90s, you changed that. The women's section became alternative rock. You were heard. You know, how have you evolved over 20 years? Because the show I saw in Lounge Acts, to tour that show 200 times a year and continue to do that for 20 years plus, I mean, I don't know how any human being can do that. How have you evolved as you've grown older to keep the spirit and keep the Ani DeFranco that everybody knows and also not, you know, die on stage?
Yeah, really. I guess, you know, so many, I feel like I've evolved and back again in many different ways, you know, like a lot of exploring, a lot of, you know, and not always successfully, you know, like musically or personally, you know, all of my explorations, but whatever. You know, I think that keeps it, I hope that keeps it interesting, you know, for somebody listening or watching, that, you know, just being, you know, having everything work out and sound great all the time is not as cool as watching somebody struggle or explore or challenge themselves. And so, I mean, there's been so many ways over the years, but I think generally I've kind of chilled out in my biorhythms a little bit. You know, I'm freaking 45 now or something, you know, and I have a couple of kids. And so I bring a different kind of energy, not so, you know, not so shrill, I think. Maybe not as, like, also not as, you know, maybe super confident. And, you know, that kind of youth stuff, the stuff of youth is so potent and so valuable when it comes to music, when it comes to social movements. But also, you know, there's stuff of age that is also valuable, and I'm just starting to access it, really, you know. Yeah. And I find, you know, it's a good feeling to be able to walk on stage and breathe from the beginning of a show, not just, you know, like half midway through when I'm like so covered in sweat and lost in whatever that I begin to breathe and forget about how scared I am or how self-conscious or how whatever, you know. Now it's like I sort of bring a little bit more calm to the whole thing, which is actually kind of really good for singing.
Yeah,
especially.
Right.
Especially, yeah.
Well, folk musician Ani DeFranco on stage at the Park West here in Lincoln Park. The newest record, Allergic to Water. She's touring right now. Ani DeFranco, thanks so much for being our guest tonight on The Download. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin. What a pleasure.